The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The health of our nation is no longer about personal choices. Obesity and disease affects us all, as they also affect the bottom line of all businesses, large and small. Welcome to Investing in the Future, Creating Wealth Through Health, with your host, Susan Doherty. With all kinds of healthcare changes in the news and affecting businesses today, you can't afford not to listen today. And now, here's Susan Doherty.
Welcome to Investing in the Future. Today's topic is very relevant in today's business world. We're talking about the aging workforce. As our population ages, employers will increasingly need to look to older workers to fill positions. The real benefit to hiring these workers is they bring a vast amount of knowledge and experience to the table. They're more mature, stable, and reliable. With some, and I repeat some, but not all aging workers, there is a decline in mental acuity and physical stamina and abilities. Now, I recently reviewed a webinar by Dr. Richard Bunch, who he's done a lot of work in the area of neurological studies. And this webinar was on ergonomics and the aging workforce. In this webinar, he points out that only about 25% of our aging process is actually due to our genetics. The other 75% is influenced by our environmental factors and our lifestyle choices, the way we take care of ourselves, what we eat, and the physical activity we endure throughout a lifetime. I once heard it said that, you know, it's not the number of times during the week that you exercise, it's the number of years you've stuck with it. And so it's really about making that a lifestyle choice. So employers have a great opportunity here to help affect employee decisions in these areas, through policies, education, health programs, including medical plan design, and even in the area of stress reduction. Anything we can do to help employees make better decisions regarding their health will benefit the employer and the communities in which they operate. Employees have an understanding of their financial health and who make good decisions about their finances, and in the context of this conversation about their retirement planning, they'll endure less stress, especially the long-term health effects of chronic stress. Let's face it, as workers age and get closer to that magic or imaginary retirement date, if they haven't done the work to financially prepare, stress will mount. While offering a 401k and or a company pension plan is highly desirable and a great step forward, companies can help educate employees on personal options and resources at little or no cost. With me today is David C. White of Thriving in Retirement. David lives by the adage of be the change you want to see in the world. His worldview of life, health, fitness, and even food selections are focused on his dedication to living a long and healthy life. He starts each day meditating and completing his workout. Surfing, singing, and dancing the tango are a few of his passions, along with the work that he does as a two-time cancer survivor working with cancer patients. We're looking at options, and he helps them find their special path. As an insurance broker and dealer, he brings his experiences to his clients and their decision-making processes. His focus is on protecting small businesses and families. He helps those looking to save money on employee benefits, setting up pensions that grow tax-free, 401ks, business continuation planning, workers' compensation, and life, health, and dental insurance. He has a fascinating story to tell about why he does retirement planning, and his involvement in financial insurance decisions always brings incredible value to the process. David, thank you for joining me here today.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Susan, for inviting me.
Well, I'm glad to be able to carry on this conversation. We've had a couple of them recently, and I want you to tell us, you know, what makes you the expert on the aging process, besides the fact that, of course, we're all aging, and after all, isn't that the goal?
You know, it's a very interesting question, because you ask me that, and I sit there, and an expert on the aging process, and I'm like, whoa, that's kind of interesting. But I think that you know, to become involved with what's going on in your life, to realize what happens as you get older, to have had cancer twice and survived it both times and deal with cancer patients as I do on a weekly and daily basis. One of the things that you realize is that as we grow older, our bodies don't tend to stay as limber. And they tend to, I was listening to a conversation with two older workout specialists who basically are physical coaches for the stars. And they were saying that, you know, when we get older, all we do is get cranky in the morning. We got to get up and we got to get moving. But you see so many older people not moving, not exercising their body, not walking enough, not running or spending enough time, you know, doing the things that the body needs to do to keep active. And if you don't use it, you lose it. A lot of us were, you know, we ran around like crazy when we were young. Do we run around anymore? A lot of us don't. And what happens is when you don't, it affects your heart, it affects all your muscles, it affects all your bones, and all the connection that goes on in your body. So to become an expert in the aging process, I'm sure that there's people that are more experts at it. However, you know, if you've lived a longer time, and I'm not as young as I used to be, and if you've had cancer, basically what happens is you change your whole viewpoint on what's important. And you realize that the wealth you really have is in your health. And if you don't have your health, you don't have anything. You have all the wealth in the world, Steve Jobs, and he can't buy his health. He would have loved to, but he can't. And anybody you talk with who's older, they will tell you, if I knew I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself when I was younger.
Absolutely. So was through your two cancer bouts, is that something that helped propel you into creating a healthier lifestyle? Did you always live that way? I mean, you know, I know that a lot of people, you know, a lot of people get a really healthy start to life. Their parents were very healthy. I didn't grow up in that. I grew up in Texas, and, you know, we ate fried food, and, you know, we used the bacon grease, you know, that was there from 3 days before. So I didn't get that healthy start like that. But, you know, a lot of people, you know, change their ways as they get older. I was one of them. I didn't start exercising really until I was in my 20s. Is that what started you, or did you always, you know, is this something you've done forever?
Well, it's, I've always been small, and when I was growing up, I wanted to, you know, play sports. And I can remember somehow I thought if I got some weights when I was, I don't know, in the fourth grade or something like that, that I'd be bigger. So I started really working out when I was younger, and did sit-ups and pull-ups, push-ups, and those kinds of things, and had weights. Never developed to be very big, but that was really a start. Always wanted to be a professional basketball player, so I always played sports. But when I got into my 30s and 40s, I started slowing down. You know, I had children, and I had a job, and I was working all the time, and I didn't work out as much and didn't take care of myself as much. I wouldn't say I was a total slacker, sitting on the sofa all the time drinking beer, but I wasn't anywhere as active as I am now. And I can remember one time looking on the scale, and I must have been in my mid to late 40s, and I looked at the scale and I went, wow, I think I weigh 40 more pounds than I did when I was in high school and in college. And I have lost all that. I basically weighed what I weighed when I was in college, and I got back to that slowly but surely. But it really was an effort to, if I could use the term, push food away. And because as you get a little bit older, your body metabolism doesn't quite work as fast as it used to, and you don't use up the food, you don't use up the fuel you're eating as much. And I was, you know, I was a fast food junkie in my 20s and 30s. You know, in my 20s and 30s, fast food became very, very popular, and it was just great. You could run in, you could get a hamburger and fries and a Coke, and, you know, that was lunch. But all of a sudden, you look at really the value, the food value, or the fuel value of what that is, and it's very, very minimal, and it's enough calories for the whole day. So you really have to change it. I think the thing that really happened is when I was 7 years ago now, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and it was really a wake-up call because I was 22 when I had my first cancer. And you just go, oh, fine, I'm fine, you know. Kids are rock solid, you know, they're supermen, and particularly guys, and so they never think about it. But when I was a little older, I went, whoa, this is serious. This is really serious. And it changed drastically. I wouldn't say drastically, but, you know, I don't eat the red meat I used to eat. I don't drink as much as I used to. I don't drink as much coffee as I used to. I don't eat white bread. I don't eat sugar. I don't eat a lot of desserts. I have vegetables for breakfast and fruit. And my diet is really good. And people comment because they see what I eat. I was at the dinner with my family over the holidays, and at dinner, one of the family members ordered hamburger fries and a drink and ordered some extra mashed potatoes, and I had a salad and green beans, and that was my dinner. So it's the choices you make every single meal, every single day, and that's what's critical.
And I think that's something that as we age, we don't take into account that, you know, our muscle mass isn't as great, and so we don't need, you know, so we're not burning calories as much, and we're not needing to fuel, you know, the less muscle as much, and paying attention to what that caloric intake, you know, what we're putting into us, but also, you know, going through the process of figuring out what are our needs. And so it sounds like you do a lot of health coaching, or coaching at least, with your people in your cancer groups that you help. Is this something you help guide them on as well?
Well, I talk with about the importance of eating right and taking care of yourself. You know, some people don't want to listen. Some people don't want to change. But when you get a wake-up call like cancer and you're older, you need to change, because if you don't change, you're going to keep on the path you're going, and particularly men, because, you know, men go to the doctor average every 5 years, women go every year. So women catch things faster, and men don't, and by the time they catch something, it's much more serious and often fatal. So it's not something that, you know, like, heart disease is a leading cause of death in the United States. And, you know, look at what bad food we eat. You know, hamburger, fries, and Coke. That's great nutrition in there. That's terrible for your heart. So if you eat those kinds of things constantly, what you're doing is you're telling your body, you know, fuel's not important. If you had a $200,000 Ferrari and you put in terrible gas, what would it run like?
It would fall apart pretty quickly, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And you wouldn't do that. I mean, it is amazing how we'll go and put the premium gas in our car, even our older car, but yet we're not necessarily putting the proper fuel in our body to help us run efficiently and for the long term.
Absolutely. I mean, I know people that care more about getting their car repaired than they do about eating well. And that's really kind of like weird, isn't it? You know, the toys are more important than the body. We only have one body. We can buy another toy.
I want to touch briefly on something else you said, though. You said, talking about the men not going to the doctor as much as versus women. But, you know, from a corporate wellness standpoint, you know, helping build these preventive programs into your, you know, because that kind of gets, that helps get the employee, men and women, into the doctor for their preventative care, and some of these things can be detected early. I know that, you know, prostate cancer is one of those that if you don't detect it early enough, you may not have a chance to make the changes that we're talking about, correct?
It's very true. That's very, very true.
So while we're on this subject, so what are some of the other areas where, you know, if someone's looking to improve their life in a way that they can help ward off not just cancer, but also the, you know, cardiovascular disease, which is, you know, still, I think, the number one killer, you know, preventable death in America, correct?
Yes.
And, you know, so we continue to go on those. And, you know, so when we're looking at that, you know, as I talked about in the early part of this conversation, was that, you know, 75% of our, you know, aging is attributable to environmental, you know, and so, you know, we have a choice of where we live. You want to try not to live under the, you know, electrical wires, for instance, or next to the, you know, industrial plant blowing, you know, carcinogens into the air, but also just the lifestyle choices that we make. You know, what are some of the other areas that we can be paying attention to?
Well, you know, I think that it really starts with your mindset, because you don't really make any change unless you've changed your mind to the fact that you need to make a change. For example, how many people say that they can lose weight and go to the gym, and first 4 or 5 days in January, the gyms are jammed, and by the 15th to the 20th of January, the gyms are empty again? So what you've done is you've said you're going to do something, but you haven't changed your mindset to really get into it. So the most important thing, I think, is changing your mindset. And if you change your mindset, then you start to change your habits, and you start to look at things more critically. For example, let's say if you're a smaller business, because most of what I work with is smaller businesses. You know, what I mean by smaller businesses, I mean under 200, under 100. Those businesses are all extremely busy, but if they self-insure, okay, and they offer things like if you go to the doctor, you get X amount of dollars off your health insurance. If you start a program of losing weight, you also get basically a bonus. If you do things like that, you get a bonus. Those are kinds of things that business can do, and it's, you know, some might say it's self-serving, but at the same time, you get better employees. You know this. You ask a manager of many employees who's got a major project that's due, say, the next day, and he walks in or she walks into the office and looks around and goes, let's see, I know Joe can handle it, and Harry can handle it, Sally can handle it, and I'll tell you this. They're not the ones that are 50 or 60 pounds overweight, because in the afternoon, they're not as sharp, they're not as together, and they're thinking more about what they're going to eat for dinner than having the energy to be able to work maybe an extra 2 or 3 hours to finish the project. So it's critical for a business to start to look at their employees and say, wait a second, we have to do something about this one. We have to do something about that one. Harley-Davidson is a very interesting company because all the people that make those, you know, big hog motorcycles are older. And they've been in that business for a long period of time. And Harley-Davidson looked at their employees and said, wow, they're getting heavier, they're getting older. No young people want to come in this business, and they can't do the things that these guys do because they've done them for years. We've got to take better care of the employees. So they really started to motivate their employees to give them bonuses for getting in better shape and everything like that, because they realized that where would their business be if a lot of these older people got sick, got by diabetes, got had heart attacks and couldn't work? How would they be able to, you know, keep up their production? So there's companies out there, and another one is Google, and many of them in Silicon Valley, here in San Diego, Qualcomm. What they've done is they have good food in their cafeterias. The fries they have, they might have fries, but they're usually sweet potato fries. They have, you know, not as bad hamburgers. And, for example, Google, if you wanted to find a Coke or a Pepsi or those bad drinks that are all sugar and no value, you have to get down on your knees and crawl in the corner, and their drink selection's probably 50 to 75 feet long with all kinds of different drinks in it. And they only have a couple of those Cokes and Pepsis because they know how bad that is. They keep the healthy ones out there, right? Yeah, they put the healthy ones out front. That's what they want to grab. And they have the salads out there, and they have the good foods, and they have the Indian food, and they have the different, you know, cultural foods because of that as well. But they have the good food, and they keep the bad food away.
Absolutely. So on that note, we're going to take a break here, and we'll be back in 2 minutes, and we're going to talk about what it looks like to be an older worker and how that, you know, individually we can help ourselves, and from a corporate standpoint we can help as well. So stay tuned.
business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio. Voice America Business Network.
In sales, are you a lion or a vulture? Lions don't wait, they just go for it. Vultures hang around until the lions are finished and just pick up the scraps. How can you set yourself apart as a lion? Join the other aspiring sales lions and listen to Forget Patience, Let's Sell Something with host Ty Maynor. You'll learn the tips and strategies of top sales professionals. You'll gain more clients at a faster rate and at higher margins. If you're a sales professional, business owner, or executive, listen in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Are you and your business well prepared? For what, you may ask? Well, what about workplace violence, cyber attacks, or general business disasters? Listen for Fear is Negotiable, Business Survival Skills 101 with your host, Pamela Hill. We'll bring you case studies of the businesses that don't prepare and the consequences that can happen. We'll also bring you best practice strategies that can help you keep your business running smoothly. Tune in to Fear is Negotiable, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're tuned in to Investing in the Future, Creating Wealth Through Health with Susan Doherty. Got a question or comment today? Please call into the show at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to Susan at thehealthywell.com. Now back to Investing in the Future, Creating Wealth Through Health.
Welcome back. We're here with David White, and we're talking about the aging workforce and what not just what employers can do, but actually what we can do as individuals to improve our life and our lifestyle so that we actually we're enjoying what we're doing as we're getting older, right? I mean, there's nothing worse than, you know, yeah, I'm older and life isn't any fun anymore, but there's a lot we can do to just really increase our livelihood. And so with people retiring later in life for want or need, right, I think it's more important than ever for people to stay healthy as they age. And you and I were talking the other day. I wanted to bring this up right quick because you had a really awesome view about how old is old. And you were telling me about some research on that you've seen on how long the body can last. And I found that fascinating. Why don't you explain to us what you've learned in that area?
Well, yes, I've always been fascinated with the body and why we need as much sleep as we do, and what some people live to 90 or 100, and some people live to 60. And in Silicon Valley, many of the very, very wealthy business owners have donated millions and millions and millions of dollars to Stanford. And I wish I could remember the woman researcher that's been on radio and television a couple times, but she's basically done research that the body is capable of living to 150. And the reason that we do not live longer is because in our mind we say we're old. And, you know, you can talk with people and you see people that's in their 40s and they say, I'm old. Oh, man, I'm getting old. I can't walk anymore. My body's the blah, 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 blah. And at the same time, you see people in their 70s, 80s, and they never talk about being old. They talk about being young and how young they are and how vibrant they are and what they do. Again, it is a mindset. You know, the mind tells us we're old. Now, I'm not saying that the body is creaky. Mine's creaky. You know, I have a couple of things going on, but I keep it active. Movement, twisting, lifting, you know, working it out, you know, bending, all those kinds of things, it is great for it. And you can go to a good trainer. I'm not talking about just any trainer, but a good trainer, and go a couple of times and find out the kinds of things you need for your body. You don't have to do it, you know, all the time. I work out every day in the morning in my house, but I have a trainer that I go to, and she works on certain things, and then I do them, you know, every day at my house in the morning. I don't go to a gym to do it. And so, But the thing is, you have to do it all the time. You have to be dedicated to doing it. You can't sit there and go, oh, yeah, I work out once a month. I work out once a week. That doesn't do it. You have to take your heart. You got to get it pumping.
Hey, I watched a workout video, right?
I watched your workout video. Yeah, that's funny. That's really good. You can watch it. But as you're sitting there on the sofa doing nothing. But if you do work out, if you do work your body, walking is wonderful. Doing a little bit of running, doing some stretching and lifting. That doesn't have to be a lot, just a little bit. I mean, I use 5-pound weights. I don't use 40-pound weights. I use 5-pound weights. And there's just a little bit, but the thing is, it keeps your muscles trim. It also works your body a little bit and keeps you more vibrant.
And that's just it. It's like, it's not that, you know, we don't have to, like, be preparing to be a, you know, for a triathlon or something. It's really about the little things, but it's just more about being consistent and, like you said, just keeping those muscles moving and growing. And when I get up and I stretch out and everything creaks and cracks, you know, to me, that's the sound of them loosening up and becoming more limber. It's not the sound of them being old, because, I mean, I've been creaky for, you know, a long time, so I can't really blame it all on age. Maybe there's a little bit more now, but certainly, you know, just like you said, just get out and go for a half an hour walk, even 3 10-minute walks, right?
And they say that the 20 minutes is really good, because what you want to do is you want to get your heartbeat up for 20 minutes. I've heard that from many doctors. And what that 20 minutes basically gets your whole system working better. I'm sure the 3 10-minute walks would be good, but if you had 3 20-minute walks a week, that would be some pretty good exercise.
Well, I didn't mean 3 10-minute walks in a week. I meant like 3 in a day, but I know what you're saying as far as the consistent, the being out there long enough to actually, you know, get your heart working on a consistent manner during that walk, and maybe 10 minutes doesn't quite get it up and sustainable for that. But, you know, this is a good opportunity for employers to put, you know, you can put in little programs as well, right? You can, you know, let's, you know, we have a walk around the building program. You know, maybe I've heard of companies actually lining out a quarter mile walk, you know, so the employees can go out and, you know, around their building and do that a few times, and, you know, it's definitely helpful and encouraging their employees instead of discouraging, you know. Because I know that there are, I've known managers who were discouraging for, you know, I want you in your desk. But,
right.
You know, I mean, well, it's, you know, getting out and working, right? You improve the mind.
Jenny Craig has I would call it a track around their corporate headquarters here in San Diego, and they encourage walking meetings. And they encourage people to get out and walk on their meetings. And I don't know if you've ever had a walking meeting, but your mind works better, it's sharper, and you're more together, you're more aware. Your mind thinks faster, and it actually thinks of better things because you're physically moving. A long time ago, I was told by someone who said, when you get on the phone and you're talking with people, and you're in a more of a high-powered conversation, you should get up and walk around as you're doing it. Because that basically gets your body moving, but it also gets the blood in your mind moving and gets you to have your mind working better. Many companies are starting to look and saying, we should have breaks during the day, and those breaks during the day should be exercising and stretching breaks. And there's a lot of companies out there that will put together programs for you where you take breaks every 45 minutes just to get up from, you know, that static position in front of your computer, move just a little bit, and, you know, maybe for 2 or 3 minutes and get back down again. There's even ones you can do in your chair that stretch your back, stretch your arms, and move your head side to side, and you do some bending. And I know this, every once in a while I get in I'm doing something on my computer, and I get so involved that I look up, and I've been on the computer for an hour and a half, and I'm not as effective. So I get up and I move, and then I get back down again, and I'm better when I get back down again because it's just my system seems to work better. My mind seems to be sharper.
Well, and that's just it. It's like, you know, if you can stand up, get your blood flowing, it's going to also have, you know, increase that blood flow in your brain, which, you know, keeps things going and, you know, and reduces stress. I mean, because cortisol, you know, I mean, it's that hormone that under stress, you know, tells our body to hang on to fat, and it, put, you know, pumps sugar into the system as well. So, and that's just not helping the aging worker particularly. I mean, the younger workers can run that off, but, you know, as we get older, we need to kind of keep that down. So, you know, absolutely these stretching programs and ergonomics, I say, you know, once an hour, take a 30-second break. Every 2 hours, take a 2-minute break. And every, you know, by the third hour, you need to have at least gotten up and walked around for 5 minutes, right? At least.
Well, you know, long ago there used to be something that, you know, you should take a 15-minute break every 4 hours, you know, in between the 4 hours, you should take a 15-minute break. And actually businesses used to do that. The pressures of, you know, the last 8 to 10 years as the economy has really hit businesses, I think has stopped some of those things from being done. But I think that there's a lot of companies that realize that, my most important asset, what costs more than anything else but your employees? You know, I mean, there's probably some businesses that they have more money and other things than employees, but I don't think so. If you look at your biggest expense, it's your employees. Maybe I should say taxes first, the government. Well, after that,
the government gets their part first, but,
yeah,
but
right.
No, the human capital, absolutely.
Yes, but the human capital. So your human capital is extremely valuable, and you know, Google realizes this, and they take care of their employees. I mean, they really take care of their employees. They encourage them to go to the doctor. They encourage them to get exercise. You know, they do such things as, you know, they have child care right there on site, because if you have a child and your child's sick, that's where your mind is all day. But if you know that you take them to your work, and your work is going to have a doctor look at them because they're going to do that in child care, and if there's a problem, they'll phone you up and you can go over and talk with the doctor who's seeing your child. If you know that, then you can sit there and work because you're not worried about your child. So companies that realize the value of their employees are sitting there and saying, we've got to treat our employees well, take care of them well, and they will then in return work for us and be very, very efficient. I saw something years ago on television, and I wish that I had written it down and saved it, but there was a company outside of Washington, D.C. area, and they were interviewing the president of the company, and the president of the company said, I have no turnover problems. When I have projects, I have people volunteer, and he really cared about his employees. And he said, if I have a major project, I go out and ask people to volunteer, and they'll volunteer and work all weekend. But you know what he does? He gives them complimentary time off plus anytime they want it. Because he said, if I demand something of them, I'm going to take care of them. And there's no turnover. He never has any HR problems with looking for employees, because all of the employees, you know, recommend their people. As soon as there's a job opening, they all recommend their best friends to work there. Not their best friends, but their best working friends, because they want to keep the energy and the level of production very high. And this company said, I haven't put an ad in the paper or anything like that, or had anything like that in years. I just don't worry about that stuff.
So the money that they're maybe is spending a little extra money on the one side, but they're saving it somewhere else. I mean, and that's true of, you know, I would say that's true of people and our health. I mean, if you're taking care of yourself, maybe you are spending a little bit of extra money, right, on your, you know, fitness program, on your gym membership, you know, maybe fruits and vegetables cost a little bit more money than cookies and, you know, the candy. But at the same time, you're saving that money in the long run on your health care. You know, I look at that balance. You know, it's like, okay, I'm spending it here, but what am I saving? What am I getting out of it?
You know, I think this. If one of your employees has to have a major operation, what does that cost you in time down, other kinds of things like that? San Diego Unified School District said that for every day one of their teachers is sick, I think it cost them $10,000. Now, that seems to be amazing, but they worked this out because they have to hire someone to come in. They've got to get a substitute. The person's missing work, and the multiplying effect of all of that is tremendous on the bottom line. Now, if you put in an exercise program and you do these things, yes, it's going to cost a little bit of money up front, but what you're going to save is on your health insurance costs, what you're going to save in on your employee downtime, what you're going to save in is part-time employees you've got to bring in to pay because people are sick. You're going to save in all of those. Yes, it might cost you up front, but the long-run benefits are going to be so much more that's going to cost you to set up the program. It's worth it to set it up. But small companies have a problem because financially, you know, they've been struggling the last couple of years. I think that's going to start change now that the economy has gotten a little stronger and it's not quite so tight, if I can use the term.
Right. And at the same time, we were talking about what the employer is looking at is, you know, all the benefits they're gaining, but they're also gaining in productivity and engagement from the employee who is loving working there. So they're working harder to stay in that job because the last thing, you know, especially in a tight economy, you want to keep your great job.
Right. Well, if you work for a company that really cares about you, that supports you, and you really feel they support you, if your boss comes to you and says, you know, we need a little bit of extra work this done because we've got a major project, you sit there and go, they really support me, I'll do it. And then the company sits there and goes, you worked an extra 8 hours over this weekend, we're going to give you a full day off and another half day. You'd sit there and go, well, thank you, that's great. And do you feel like you want to gift the company or you want to pull something on the company or you don't want to work this hard? No, you feel that this company really cares for me. And if you talk with people, the last couple of years, do major corporations care about people? Most of what you hear is, no, they don't. And what level of commitment are they getting from their employees?
But I must say that I do talk to a lot of people and a lot of companies, and they are doing a lot out there. You mentioned some of the big ones. You know, Google, LinkedIn is another one that really puts a lot out there for their employees. I think that there's a lot of companies out there that really are doing the best. So, you know, and we've been talking a lot here about physical health and that's, you know, the importance of maintaining physical health, but that also feeds mental health as well. So, you know, having a nutritious diet and proper exercise and all of that is going to help you physically, mentally, stress reduction and all those things. But also, you know, all of this, there's also another side of it, and that is the financial health of things. And so, you know, there's a lot of ways that, you know, employers can accommodate aging workers in the area of physical health, and even in their workstations and design and training and work schedules, especially for the aging workers, we can, you know, really fill that in. But of course, that's a whole topic unto itself of what, you know, the accommodation side of things. But when we come back from our break, we're going to delve into the financial health side of things and how workers can start preparing financially for that date of retirement. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Want to be empowered to take your leadership skills to the next level in your business? Tune into A Sharp Outlook, Best Practices for Success with host Angela Sharp. Using industry-specific materials, toolkits, and expert guests from all facets of business, our program will empower you to develop a strong core in your business leadership, infrastructure, growth, and technology. A Sharp Outlook airs live every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
America is heading over a fiscal cliff. Home prices are still receding and unemployment growing.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You're tuned in to Investing in the Future, Creating Wealth Through Health with Susan Doherty. Got a question or comment today? Please call into the show at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to Susan at thehealthywell.com. Now, back to Investing in the Future, Creating Wealth Through Health.
Welcome back. We're talking with David White, Thriving in Retirement. And we've been covering the topic of thriving from a physical and mental standpoint as we age and making sure that we're prepared to enjoy life in retirement. But that also, to get to that age of retirement, we kind of need to be prepared financially to get there. And, you know, and it takes some planning, and you can't just start thinking about it when you turn 50. You need to start planning earlier. So, David, why don't you share with us some of your strategies for helping people and what we need to be looking at as we age, and when should we start looking at it? You know, those kind of things. What needs to be on our radar, and from what point?
Well, I think it's really critical to they always talk about taking 10% of your check when you get it, and you set it aside. You don't set it aside for a rainy day. You set it aside for retirement. It's really 10% that you put aside. If you start to do that in your 20s, the compounding of interest over, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, you'd just be amazed at how much money you will have at retirement. If you start in your 20s, you're in very good shape. If you start in your 50s, you don't have enough time to put a lot away unless you can put heck of an amount of money away each month. Now, yes, in your 20s, you don't have the money that you do in your 50s, but I would say this. Most 20-year-olds that I know, they throw away more money on a weekend partying than it would cost. Is if they just didn't party one night a month, they could probably put away $150. I mean, I know kids that tell me, oh, over the weekend I spent $300 or $400 partying. And I sit there and I go, yeah, but if you just did party one or just party a little less, you could put away $100 a month. You put away $100 a month from the time you're in your 20s, you're going to retire with well over $1 million, maybe $2 or $3 million. If you have a good financial advisor and you've thought of good ways to put your money away.
You can't be stuffing this money in your mattress. You have to actually invest in something to get that compounding.
Yeah, well, you've got to get the compounding. Well, you know, think of a bank. You know, a bank pays you, you know, on your savings account, what? I'll just say they pay 1%. You know, that's really great. But if you know the rule of 72, it takes 72 years at 1% for your money to double. Let's just say you made 10% a year, and a good financial advisor can do that. There are insurance platforms that you can do that on as well. If you get 10% a year compounded over a time period, you're talking about a tremendous amount of money. If you just take $10,000 and you compound it at 10%, over 40 years, you're talking about $650,000, okay? Just if you put $10,000 in your early 20s and didn't add to it at all, just had it compound at around 10%, you'd have $650,000. What happens if you put in, let's say, $25,000 a month when you're younger, when you're in your young 20s, then you go to $50,000, then you go to $100,000, and by the time you're maybe in your 40s or 50s, you put in $300,000 or $400,000 a month, you could retire with $2 or $3 million. And today, the average 401k, the average 401k retirement is $70,000+. Now, in California, that will last how long?
Not so long. I'm saying not so long.
Not for long. So, you know, you need to think seriously about what's important. And a new car every 2 or 3 years is really not that important. But putting money away every single month, that's the important thing. And if you look at the people who retire well, they're the ones that have done that. They put money away every single month, and they've thought about it. And I'm not one that did that. That wasn't taught to me when I was young. I can remember my father telling both my brother and I, you know, we don't talk about money in the family. You'll learn that about accounting and things like that in economics when you get in school. They don't tell you anything about putting money away and saving for retirement. That's not a discussion ever in school. It's one of the most important things we can do for ourselves.
Yeah, I think it's and one of the most important things that a parent can do for their child is to start them on that path of learning how to save when they're early, even when they're a small child. You know, they can say, here's your allowance. We're going to go put 10% over here, you know. And I think that's, you know, I'm with you. My parents didn't teach me these things, but I'm always impressed when I see someone who, you know, they tell me that they do are teaching their young children this, because, you know, we all get this financial blueprint in our head, right? And so as we get older, we kind of grow up with our parents in our head, or, you know, whatever we grew up with of those strategies. And if we didn't learn them from them, it's harder for us to learn them, correct?
Absolutely. Well, when I have three grandchildren, they were born, each one of them, I got them a type of insurance policy that has what I call a floor, so you don't lose money, and a guarantee each year. And I put in money every single month for them. And I told my children, I'm not giving you lots of Christmas presents. I'm not giving you lots of birthday presents. What I'm doing is putting this money in for my grandchildren, your children. And I was showing my son one of the workups that I did. And when his son is 18, ready to go to college, he's going to have probably $75,000 to $100,000 that he could grab cash value out of for school.
Wow, that's amazing! Congratulations!
Oh yeah, and it's like, you know, and my daughter-in-law loves it, and on the other side, my son-in-law said that's the best thing you do. You know, our kids don't need any more Christmas presents; they don't need more birthday presents. And I was criticized by one person in my family that said, you should be giving presents to your kids. I said, I am. I'm giving
you
them
are.
A gift every
you're
single
giving
year.
Them a gift that's not going to be, in the trash or in the bottom of the closet in 3 weeks.
Right. Or broken.
So, one of the questions I have, you know, because this is all a numbers game, you know, what do we need for retirement? And, you know, especially when you're, you know, in your 20s, it's really hard to fathom this, you know, and going back to what you were saying about, you know, the kids that are just out spending the money and not saving, it is really hard for them to think about what they're going to need in 50 years, you know, how much money they're going to need, and that I need to be putting money away because, you know, of course you get a lot of people, kids that are going, I don't even know I'll live that long, why should I prepare for it? But, you know, it goes back to what you said about, you know, if I'd have known I was going to live this long, I'd have taken better care of my body. Well, it's the same thing about your financial health. If you hadn't known I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of my financial health. How can we go about figuring out how much money we're going to need in retirement as we're getting up? You know, I mean, it's hard, again, it's hard to figure that out in your 20s because we don't know what things are going to cost or anything, but we can start planning. And how do we go about, what do we need to be looking at?
Well, today they say if you're at the retirement age, if you're in your 60s, 70s, you need at least $2 million in retirement. And the reasoning for that is that the average person who's 65 today is going to live to 85. If you're married, the average person will live to 87, and one of the two will live to 92. So if you're thinking about if you're married, couple, and you're 65 years old, you're thinking about retirement, one of you is going to live to 87, the other one to 92. So how much money do you need? surely not 70,000. You need 2 million plus. And they say that if you have money, you should only take, they used to say take out 4%. Now they say you need to take out only 2.75% a year to have enough money to be able to live for your retirement. So if you can only take out 2.7% a year, then figure out how much money you need to live on each year and multiply that up, and you'll find out, yeah, you're talking over $2 million. I would say that there are 3-5%, 7%, maybe 10% of the people have $2 million in retirement. So
that are really prepared for that. And as we age, you know, as our longevity gets farther out, you know, you're talking, you know, 85 and 92, because those numbers, you know, 20 years ago were never talked about. You know, there were the anomalies in people who did live that long, but now we're even looking at people who are living into their hundreds, and that number is growing a lot. So, I'm seeing, and tell me if you agree with this, and I'm, because this isn't anything I've researched or studied, but that, you know, we are going to be working longer. You know, we're going to be working, you know, not just to 65, but, you know, 70, 75, and even 80, as, you know, but you want to be maintain that vitality and health. But have you seen any research on this? Is any of that, any information on that that you might have?
Well, yes. They say that about 70% of the people today, I think it's 68, somewhere around in there, you know, do not have enough money in retirement, and they say they're going to be working until they pass away.
Right.
It's very interesting, isn't it? Until they pass away, not until they get to be 80, until they pass away. Now, if you're not very healthy and you live to 80 and you're not healthy or you're way overweight and you don't eat very well, how are you going to be able to work?
Right.
And
you can't.
Happen. I mean, that's the catastrophe that's sitting out there waiting to happen. That's a catastrophe that's going to wait to happen, because the baby boomers are the largest, you know, generation, and we started turning 65, 4 or 5 years ago, and for the next 17 years, this big baby boomer generation is going to be retiring, and you know, 10 years down the road, we're going to have a lot of seniors, you know. Where are they going to be living? Who knows?
It's going to be an interesting time. It will. So what can employers do to help their employees meet these financial goals in retirement? Let's go over a few of the plans and some of the options that they have for helping.
Well, one, they should have consumer-directed health care so that they get their employees to start to think more about, the decisions that they make and those kinds of things. And consumer-directed healthcare means that the consumer makes a little bit more of decisions on what his healthcare is, and that should be explained. You can have people come in and do lunch and learns, and they'll come in free. You can have financial advisors come in. You can have health professionals come in. You can have all kinds of people come into your business to do lunch and learns at lunch and educate your employees. And those are kinds of things that people should be offering. And a lot of companies are offering those kinds of things, and a lot of the professionals in the health and finance area are going to companies and saying, look, I'll come in and talk with you. I'll do a lunch and learn for, you know, and it won't cost you anything. I'll just come in to 45, 50 minutes and talk with your employees. So those kinds of things are available out there. More and more companies should be looking at those. Because they're just going to be the benefit to the employee, to the company in the long run.
Yeah, because, again, it always takes me back to better educated your employees are and the better prepared they are, the less stress they're going to have, you know, particularly as they age, on, you know, what am I going to do? How is this going to work for me? So, you know, we've been here. We've covered a lot of information from, you know, many different angles here today. So from my side of the discussion, I want to leave the business audience with the advice of educate your employees on the benefits of staying healthy, you know, especially how it relates to reducing their cost over a lifetime and frees up their financial capital to invest in their retirement and also, you know, more enjoyable endeavors. But, you know, what would be your number one piece of financial advice you want to leave our listeners with?
Change your habits and eat better. Most important thing, if you talk with a doctor and ask him what's the most important thing, is to change your habits and eat better. Not even exercise, but eat better. Eat fruits and vegetables. Cut back on red meat. Cut back on starches, you know, potatoes, you know, white bread, anything with sugar in it. Cut back on all those good things, just like the government says, eat your fruits and vegetables, you know, five servings of this a day, five servings of that a day, and don't eat as much. Eat less.
And I think that's, you know, I love the idea of, and this was introduced, you know, they've done lots of research and studies on it, is, you know, start off with a smaller plate size. You know, the larger the plate, the more we fill it, and the more, you know, percentage-wise of calories. So I think that's a great idea. You know, and your financial advice would be to?
Start saving early and don't ever touch it.
Just leave it alone. You know, and get in with a good financial advisor as well. I mean, if you can, even if it's just a one-time charge, you know, that you go and pay somebody, at least you start off with some good information. I think that, you know, that would be really helpful for people, is because we don't know. We start off and we're just a little, you know, we don't know where to start. And so that leaves us not starting. So, David, I want to thank you so much for this great discussion on health and wellness and financial soundness. And so if someone had a question about you or your business, how can they reach you?
My telephone number is 760-576-6411. My email is david@thriveinretirement.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Susan. I really appreciate it as well. You have a great show.
Thank you. Please join me again next week on Investing in the Future, each Wednesday at 3 p.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern.
Thanks for tuning in today to Investing in the Future, Creating Wealth Through Health. Please join your host, Susan Doherty, again next Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great and overall healthy week.